With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public, free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom, and donate today. Visit realitycheck.radio/donate.
Welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. And joining me now, from Ireland, but now currently in Auckland, Graham Linehan. And how are you this morning? Welcome to New Zealand.
Thank you. I'm good. I had a lovely walk along Auckland Harbour last night. And they had a really pleasant version of culture shock. You know, it's a beautiful city.
That's nice, because I hear that there were police at the airport, Graham.
Yeah, well, I know. I had a bit of a fright. Like, I've been on the plane for, you know, I think the flight is 22 hours. And I thought, oh, my God, they're going to send me back. And but no, they immediately reassured me. They said, everything's fine. And they were both Father Ted fans. So they were laughing at everything I said, even though I wasn't trying to be funny. And it was actually quite a pleasant experience. You know, we met the Free Speech Union, and they asked us what our movements would be and where we'd be. I guess maybe to keep a something of an eye on me, but also I think because they're nervous of a repeat of the terrible things that happened when Posy Parker was here. Yeah. So, but you know, I don't think there will be a repeat of that because I'm a man and they only attack women. You know, it. But yeah, it was it's been a lovely experience so far, I got one nasty look, which surprised me because I didn't think I'd have that kind of face fame in New Zealand, and got one guy looking daggers at me when I went out to dinner. But apart from that, it's been great.
Oh, awesome. No, that's really good. And I mean, of course, it's nice to know that you arrived in the country and your first crowd wasn't a tough crowd. So that's always good.
Yes, very good.
And as I said to you, let's segue into the book and get that out of the way nice and early because, you know, a man's got to eat and you've had a few challenges and I want to talk about those as we go on. But Tough Crowd, how is the book going? That is the new book. It's available now on Amazon and I think a variety of booksellers, which is good.
Yeah. It's going okay. It's got the usual problem that books like mine have of activists in bookshops hiding copies of it, keeping it in the stock room, burying it in the biography section rather than in the new release section and all that stuff. But we kind of knew that would happen. And our attitude is it's a marathon, not a sprint. So we'll see how it does over time. But it's doing okay. We got into the bestseller list, the Times bestseller list, and we're on our third printing. Trans activists are for some reason obsessed with trying to pretend we've only sold something like 300 books, but I've signed 4,000 books. So I unless they're sitting in a warehouse somewhere, I don't know why that would have been done. But it's going okay. It's going okay. One of my mistakes kind of was I came up with the idea of the kind of smashed glass on the cover. And I think one of the problems we have is that people don't really realize that 70% of the book is about writing comedy, is about the IT crowd and Father Ted and how these shows came about, how we cast them and why we made the decisions that we made. And then, of course, 70% of the way in, I get cancelled. And I just tell the story of the last few years, you know, which have been extraordinary, you know. The only thing I would like to get across to people is there is so much about Father Ted and IT crowd. And I think that's really what people want to find out about, you know.
Yeah.
Come for the comedy, stay for the persecution.
Yeah. Was it cathartic writing the chapters on the cancellation?
Yeah, it was great. I've spent quite a number of years feeling kind of silenced and the truth of my situation has been kind of lost in things like my Wikipedia page, which is basically controlled by trans rights activists. We can't change anything. My solicitor once tried to change things in it. You know, just get in some neutral language, change things like anti-trans campaigner and replace it with pro-women's rights campaigner, and it reverts back within 15 minutes. Mm. So there's some sort of alert on my page that means that you can't change it. And, you know, that was then used by, you know, lazy journalists and opinion makers to as kind of evidence of all the terrible things that I've done. But so as I was writing the book, I would come across, you know, various occasions in which, you know, I was lied about or my actions were misreported or the full context of things wasn't revealed. And so that was great. And as I wrote the book, I found my mood was getting better and better. And when I finished it, I came completely off the anti-anxiety medication I'd had to go on when it started. Yeah. So it was a lovely experience writing the book.
Well, it is a good thing to do. Now, if there are listeners that are thinking, well, hold on a minute, I was tuning in because I wanted to listen to the Father Ted dude. You are listening to the Father Ted dude, but here's the thing. Unless you are in that gender critical space, Graham had the temerity to actually support biological sex. And unlike your fellow writer, Joanne, Joe Rowling, who has a little bit more money behind her and a lot less ducks to give, let's just say, you had a little bit more on the line. And I think it would be good to actually talk about how it wasn't like this one great big gotcha moment. I mean, it just seemed the most innocuous thing in the world. And you were just like, well, how on earth could this happen to me? So just run through our listeners, you know, how the whole cancellation came about and where we're at now.
Well, cancellation is an interesting thing. It kind of happens quietly and loudly at the same time. Like the there was active cancellation, which was I've had about 75 hit pieces written about me by a British trans activist kind of propaganda sheet called Pink News, and these are the stories that come up when people search my name. So I immediately started attracting a kind of a toxic cloud around me that I just couldn't dispel with the truth or arguments or, you know, showing that, or even, you know, showing the many trans people who actually agree with me and of which there's quite a few who are completely distraught at the way their community has been taken over by these incredibly aggressive and hysterical and vindictive activists, you know.
Well, and it's the allies too. It's the allies. There's nothing worse than a hysterical ally, Graham. I have learned this over the years.
Definitely. And nothing seemed to work. And I just thought, well, you know, in the end, my arguments are so clear and normal. You know, for instance, single-sex spaces are important. Women's sports should be fair. I just didn't think I thought, what could they get me on? They haven't got me on anything. Even in the early days, I was very, very careful not to misgender anyone. And, you know, they call it misgendering. It's actually accurately sexing. But I was careful not to do that. I tried to get into one-on-one fights with women on the subject, because I think it's primarily a women's issue, and I didn't want to be lecturing women. I would just say my thing and drop out of any direct arguments with people. But then as time went on, none of these things mattered. And I noticed that I was losing opportunities. The first thing, and that's one reason why this is a very kind of healing trip for me, is that the first thing I lost was Frontier Comedy had asked me to do a writing workshop over here, and they cancelled it, you know, as soon as the complaints started coming in. And so that was like going to be a very lucrative thing for me. And having that money in my future just disappear when you'd been planning on it and working on it for a number of months, trying to make sure that the workshop was, you know, that people, you wouldn't be ripping people off. You'd actually put some thought into it. That was the first huge shock, you know. And it just got worse and worse. And I think another thing that happened was COVID came along and we were all isolated. And I had 2 years of people, you know, just continuing to destroy my reputation, continuing to, either misreport things I said, or one thing they love doing is they find one line in an interview and they zone in on that and twist it and amplify it until it's the only thing people get out of the interview, you know? And it just kept happening and I couldn't fight against it. I couldn't. So, you know, I mean, the thing I thought, well, at least my friends will back me up because my friends will all agree that women should have fair sports and they'll all agree that men shouldn't be going into private spaces. A lot of my friends had daughters. Quite a fair number of my friends had autistic children. And I thought that they, especially when they found out the extent of the misdiagnosis of transness in these kids, they would be on my side. But no one, not even my very, very closest friends. Mm. And some of my very closest friends did the worst things to me of everyone. It's early, so I'm not really being brilliantly
No, I completely understand that because it is, because you do sort of think, oh, these people are going to stand by you. But one of the things that I know through the experience that I've had is that ostracism and fear are two incredibly potent emotions. And you put the two of them together, and especially for you, that this happened during COVID, right? So you already had fear and ostracism together. And around, you know, whether or not you supported COVID lockdowns and the government measures, and then the vaccine came along and this polarization happened. So then if you turned up with stepped on a landmine, which you did, this beautiful invisible tripwire, and you sort of thought with the gay abandon, oh yeah, I mean, this is logic, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I know, yeah. Rookie mistake, Graham. and it just totally gets amplified by COVID. And I think any events that I saw during that time in critical social justice just went on steroids. And I tell you what, the trans radical activists are the most vicious of the bunch. And, you know, we saw that here this time last year with Posy Parker. I mean, they were whipped into a frenzy by the media during her tour here, and you know, everyone saw what happened. So where are you at now in terms of what I call the seven stages of cancellation? I mean, from the, oh my God, I've just stepped onto a landmine, everybody is shouting at me, and, you know, I don't know where I'm going, to what I call the Katie Hopkins, I have no more flying ducks that I can give, and actually, I can say whatever I want now, because they can only play that trick once. So where are you at on that continuum?
Well, you see, I started off as a lefty, liberal, progressive, I thought, had all the right opinions. I guess the only thing that's changed out of all that is I do wonder now if they could lie about me so consistently and so brazenly, then, like the BBC, for instance, did an incredibly aggressive interview with me when I was talking about child transition. And they actually decided to go for me, even though one of their journalists was working on, Hannah Barnes, was working on an expose that proved that everything I said was right. So I don't know. I wonder, were they trying to undermine her report? That's the only thing I can come up with, you know. But the thing is, my opinions, largely though, beyond a little bit of looking at people like Jordan Peterson, Brett Weinstein and all these people, and thinking, okay, I should I should see if they're if the same thing happened to them. I should, because I there used to be a kind of a toxic cloud around those names. And then you look into them and you realize, oh my God, it's all just nonsense, you know? So I still feel like I'm a progressive, I'm left wing, but I don't take anything at face value. I would never take something like The Guardian in the UK as a dependable voice on any issue, you know. Same with the BBC, you know. I just think, like, the BBC is lying so thoroughly to its viewers that why would I even, I don't have it tuned in on my TV anymore, you know, because I why would I do it? Why would I deliberately misinform myself, you know? So I feel like I'm the same person, you know. There's a classic illustration by, I think his name is Colin Wright, where he talks about how we stayed still and the line of what is considered right wing and left wing just moved, you know? And suddenly things like believing in fair sports for women was considered a right wing position.
That's so, a lovely stick figure diagram, isn't it, that he drew?
That's right, yes.
Where you sort of remain static, but the Overton window is moving very dramatically around you, yeah.
Exactly. And the Overton window is moving to a mad extent where, you know, we're very close to, like, there's an activist, Peter Tatchell, over here who, you know, wrote a letter in The Guardian in 1993, I think it was, where he talked about the positive effects of sex between 9-year-olds and adults, you know? And it's like, well, what does it take to be cancelled, you know? These guys are just kind of getting constant media gigs and no one's blinking about it. And just as is happening with the terrible anti-Semitism we've seen raging across the world since October 7th, there's a kind of a blindness to some really appalling behavior, you know. I'm still shell-shocked from it all, you know.
Have you sort of considered, because I know in the United States especially that the parallel structures are much, much stronger, and I mean that's based purely on the size of the population there. Has there been any thought?
Sorry, the what is a lot stronger?
The parallel structures around having an alternative voice and being able to make a living within a space. And in the UK.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So in the UK, for example, it's very difficult. It's the same here. But have you actually thought of pitching something, pulling something together, and actually talking to somebody like Elon Musk or Ben Shapiro at the Daily Wire and seeing if you can actually create something in that space to sort of, you know, give the middle finger to those back at home and saying, well, actually, what I've got to say is still funny and still relevant and people still want to hear it.
Sure.
And just because you don't like my personal opinion, you know, it doesn't mean that you can stop this creativity.
Yeah. Well, it's a little difficult for me because my, like, even on Twitter, where, you know, Elon's famous free speech platform, my account has not moved since I got back on. Like, the numbers don't go up, my engagement is completely through the floor. Every time I tweet, I don't really know how many people are seeing it, you know. I think that they should be going far wider, but I believe he says that it's because of algorithms that they can't sort out, and I think it might be because, like, you know, I think one of the ways that block lists on Twitter used to work is that they would triangulate a couple of accounts. So it would be people who followed me, maybe J.K. Rowling and a couple of other people, those, all their followers would then find themselves blocked by the same people, you know? So I think that I'm so despised by trans rights activists that the ones within Twitter have just done everything they can to hobble my account. So I don't really get under the noses of these people you're talking about a lot, you know. And at the same time, While I think the right have done some great work on this, the brilliant What is a Woman documentary, for instance, by Matt Walsh, they have done good work on it. I think a lot of them don't quite see it as a serious issue. It's an issue, but sometimes I find they put it down the list of priorities. And one of the other reasons why I think this debate is possibly the most important debate of our times is because it is about fundamental words like mother and woman and man. It's about our understanding of reality that has existed since we were able to think, you know, since we were first able to formulate language and make ourselves understood. That contract with reality is being broken by trans activists, you know. I don't think they do realize that that's important, but I see them just like the kind of people like Alistair Campbell in the UK and kind of centrist politicians, centrist voices. They think it's a culture war. They think it's a distraction. Not all of them. And as I say, they've been much better on this issue than the left. But I still feel like it's not quite taken seriously, and I'm not quite taken seriously. And that might also be because I'm a comedy writer, you know? Why would you take seriously the opinions of a guy who wrote a joke about priests judging sheep competitions, you know? So I'm in a weird position where I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm marginal even within the space, you know? So I don't, and also I don't have an agent. I recently lost my agent because I objected to the Doctor Who actor David Tennant calling women freaks who were trying to preserve their, you know, who were trying to make sure that children weren't put on an irreversible medical pathway. And I lost my agent for it. I should have checked, but we shared the same agent. So,
well, you know, that is now the title of your next book, Brand Manahan, yes. Free Agent.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's hard for me to make those kinds of connections and things that I used to be able to make. But luckily, the Substack that I do is earning me an income. And there's actually a few things happening quietly in the background that might come to fruition and might mean that I can get back to doing what I love, which is comedy.
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly a underground and alternative comedy movement. I mean, look at what Joe Rogan is doing in Austin, Texas. I mean, there is definitely an appetite for it, for sure. As a writer, language, how the manipulation of language, particularly from those activist classes, and redefining of so many terms that everyday people out there still believe have their traditional definitions. So it's almost like there are two dialects going. There's wokish and English.
Yes.
How do you sort of justify or sort of navigate that?
Well, there's certain words that I simply won't accept from people. Like, for instance, when they say trans people, I go, no, hang on a sec. You know, what do you mean? Because, like, you know, when you say trans people, are you talking about the young girls who have rapid onset gender dysphoria, who are cutting off their breasts because they're escaping from their own biology? Or are you talking about the middle-aged men who've been married for years and suddenly reveal to their wives that they like wearing women's knickers, and if you don't like it, you can get out, you know? Or are they talking about the young students who treat it almost like a musical fad, like goth or emo, you know, where they color their hair and they adopt a set of beliefs that come with the hair dye? Who are you talking about? You're certainly, most of the time, not talking about transsexuals, you know, who are people who are so fixated on this idea that they'll be happy if they remove their genitals, that they do it, you know? And that's the only cohort of that bunch that I have sympathy for. Or, sorry, the young women I have sympathy for. And anyone who is in distress, I have sympathy for. But I think that some of the other groups, like the young activists, the CEOs of charities like Stonewall and Amnesty, they are actually promoting dysphoria. And they are installing dysphoria into a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have it, you know. So I won't accept certain language, you know, cisgender. I won't accept it. It's meaningless because there's no such thing, for instance, as a cis woman. Women do not come in different varieties. They are adult human females, and that's it. So when people say cis women, I just won't accept it. And so you kind of get into an intro. That's why another reason why they won't debate with you for the most part. So I don't tend to have these conversations, but sometimes a broadcast journalist will be foolish enough to use one of these words with me. And it always ends badly for them because they can't define them. They don't know what transgender means. They don't know what cis means. They don't know what any of the words that they've been trained to use mean. I was interviewed by an RTE journalist and he used the phrase sex assigned at birth, and that is activist language, you know, because your sex is not assigned at birth, it is observed often before birth, you know, in utero. So yeah, that's what I do. I ask them to define their terms, I ask them to say exactly what they mean by certain things. And it they never can, because this whole thing is built on sand, you know.
We've got linguistic sand. It is linguistic sand. And we have a judge here that appears on the station from time to time. He's a retired judge. And he, in an interview, he talked about mis and disinformation. And he said in his day, he said misinformation, he said, was called a rumor, and disinformation was called a lie. And he said, I refuse to use those terms anymore. He said, they're rumors and lies. And malinformation, which seems to be the new one, well, that's just simply inconvenient truth, isn't it? So,
yes, yeah. And I found it interesting. I discovered something interesting recently. I'm reading a book called The Delusions of Crowds, which is not the Douglas Murray book. It's a different book. It's an economist wrote it. I think that's the title. And he kind of deals mainly in mass delusions, mainly economic ones. So he would concentrate on things like the South Sea bubble, tulip fever that happened in Holland, the Beanie Babies craze, all these types of things where people thought they were going to get rich through various kind of silly endeavors. And they just caught on like wildfire across the world. But the one he begins with are the various religious sects and cults that happened after the creation of the printing press. The printing press happened, and suddenly all these kind of lunatics who up until then had been mumbling to themselves and scribbling down their legible thoughts in notebooks, suddenly they were able to get these thoughts disseminated around the world. And it led to a period of pure madness where there were growing up all over the place. The only successful thing that happened, came out of it religion-wise, was Protestantism and Martin Luther. But the rest of the time, it was just a bunch of end-of-world cults who thought they'd discovered a secret code in the Bible that told them the truth. And they'd end up either killing themselves or killing other people. So it was a period of extreme madness brought about simply because books have a weight that your scribbled craziness doesn't have. I think the same thing has happened to the internet with the internet. I think basically the internet came along. I have a joke in the book where I talk. It's a serious joke where I say that I think one of the things that's leading to the end of the world is spell check, because spell check is one of those things. In the old days, if someone was crazy, it would come across in the writing. But now you have your computer saying, hey, you've kind of misspelled this word. Do you want to change it? You're like, yeah, I will. And suddenly all these lunatics look like reasonable people. So that's my spell check will destroy the world theory. But that's what, there's a dissemination now. And for some reason, and people do have this thing, and I know it myself because I used to be a music critic, and I've been a victim of it, and I've done it. And what it is when you write something down, it suddenly has an authority that sometimes it deserves, but often it doesn't. Things that are written down, people take it seriously. So, you know, now we have like everybody is a writer, everybody is a journalist, everybody is a broadcaster, and it's kind of impossible to tell who to trust and who not to trust. You know, that's another reason why the betrayal of BBC is so extreme, because you, of all the things you, the British people should be able to trust, the BBC is top of the list. But the BBC has been completely captured by this ideology. And at the moment, it is committing a kind of lie by omission, because it's not talking about the WPATH report, which is an incredibly significant 242-page, heavily cited report that that just shows that these gender clinicians are making it up as they go along, you know? And you know, some of the things in it, you know, they're pretty newsworthy, including my favorite thing in it was there was a conversation between a couple of doctors who were prescribing cross-sex hormones to people, you know? And the rule seemed to be that it was a very stringent rule that you could only give cross-sex hormones to people who asked for them. That's the really stringent rule they have, you know. And one doctor said that he, quote unquote, regrettably had to refuse one patient because the patient was having hallucinations during the assessment. That's the only person they didn't give the drugs to. So, you know, and they're talking to 9-year-olds about their fertility. They're saying, oh, do you want to say, the 9-year-olds don't yet even have the ability to produce sperm that you can save and use for fertility later on. And the only other form of medicine where young people are deliberately sterilized by doctors is if they're undergoing cancer treatment, you know? So it's a massive scandal. And the BBC is just whistling and looking the other way and, you know, lying by omission.
But it's because, you know, I truly believe, though, Graham, is they're doing it because they've gotten away with it, and they got away with it during COVID. You know, those inconvenient truths during COVID, the things that were there that they didn't report on because it didn't suit them to report on it, well, they got away with it then, and you have, you know, you've got at least in your house, you've got a few people in your parliament who are saying, hey, there are some things that you need to look at here. Here's the data. Here's this. Here's that. Here's, and Rishi Sunak recently via GB News got, you know, shouted down by a victim of the vaccine. And yet, and because they've got away with it once, when it comes to this stuff, they're like, oh, you know, they didn't seem to make it too much of a stir there, and they're just doing it again. But I think that there comes a point, and I mean, you would see this sort of coming from the left, I think, too. There comes a point where everyday people, I think, get to a, okay, no, I've had enough. Had enough now.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, there's that spot. And the trans stuff is one I've discovered that is the thing that will wake people up, because they will, especially dads with daughters, they're like, what do you mean you're doing this in my school? You know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it will. I think what, to be honest with you, I wasn't across what happened with COVID. My opinion with COVID was, well, there's nothing I could do. You know, it's like, I'll take the jab. I'll do what they say, because I'm, you know, I was still in that stage where I was kind of trusting people that they weren't going to actually kill me or destroy my health. But the thing I think that would be useful, that we need from this period, is kind of a truth and reconciliation process. We need to be able to say, okay, what just happened? In fact, I thought that would be another good title for a book. What just happened in the last 5-10 years, COVID, what was the truth behind it? The gender wars, what actually, how did they come about? Who financed them? Why were all these institutions captured? You know, those conversations, I think, possibly have to happen before we're going to be able to trust anyone, you know, because we were like, you know, I can see the BBC lie. I'm so across this subject. When the BBC lie about it, I can see it. I'm sitting there watching them lie to our faces. So we need new management in these places, and we need people who are willing to say, let's look at this let's look at a number of issues and see why communication broke down between people, why things became so polarized, and what we can do to make sure it never happens again, you know?
So then Britain has obviously got an election coming up. I know they haven't announced the date, but it is coming. It's not looking good for the Tories, let's face it. So it definitely looks like instead of voting for Labour, they're voting against the Tories. But the downside with that is potentially a chance for these ideologies to become more entrenched than what they already are. I mean, if they've become this insane with the activists and the radicals with the Tories in charge, what's going to happen when you've got somebody, a parliament that is more liberally leaning to accept all of these? Are you concerned about that?
I am and I am. There's a couple of good things about it. I think the first thing that will happen is that a lot of these activists will become a little reckless, they'll think that they now have an open field and they're going to reveal themselves. And the brilliant thing about trans activists is every time they reveal who they are, people don't like it. You know, we just had a fantastic result in Ireland where a resolution to take the words mother and woman out of the constitution was trounced. I mean, over a million people voted against it, and the percentages were something like 73% against and or 73% no vote. And that's huge. And I think, and you know, you don't get, there's few more woke governments than the Irish government. So what was great about it is that the Irish government gave the people, in a huge tactical error, a chance to have their say on an issue that is that usually they've been kind of trying to keep under the radar. Famously in Ireland, self-ID, which means that, you know, basically any man who says he's a woman is a woman, you know, but self-ID came in without Irish people being consulted at all. There was a vote about it, but it was, people didn't really understand it. It was attached to marriage equality, so everyone thought it was the progressive thing to do. And in a way that English people, the reason why English feminism or British feminism or, sorry, no, in, no, what is it? It's UK feminism. The reason why UK feminism is so strong is because they saw it all coming. And they could see that you know, all the mechanisms getting into place that were going to start destroying women's rights, and they started fighting back against it. Ireland didn't have a chance, you know. But so things like that might happen with Labour, but it is the nature of this activism, of trans activism, to overreach, to troll people, you know. I think that a lot of trans activism is trolling. I think you might find it could go that it gets worse, but it also could happen that the end of the movement is accelerated in the UK.
That would be interesting. Wouldn't that be a fine thing? And the Irish too, haven't the Irish entrenched hate speech laws now?
They're trying to, yeah. That's the next thing that's coming up, you know. And I think that that'll be harder for them now as well, because they've tried to portray the no votes as right wing. And I think Irish people are going to be very suspicious of any further, limits on their speech. So they're not going to have an easy time with that, I'm hoping.
So then once you sort of get through all of this, and I hope you have a wonderful tour, because I do understand being a little bit sticky, pinning down a Wellington venue.
Yeah, we have one cancelled.
Wokish Wellington has been a little bit...
But you know, the Free Speech Union had another one lined up and we're ready to go. So, I'll be there.
It's not their first rodeo. I've got a funny feeling they probably would have had multiple venues lined up. I've actually got a number of friends who are coming to see you and they're really looking forward to it. Yeah, so you sold out Auckland last night and then you're off to Wellington for Thursday. And hopefully there's still tickets available. And then down to Christchurch the following days. Christchurch is sold out as well. So just a few tickets left in Wellies that you might be able to snap up.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if it is as woke as people tell me it is, and you want to get a ticket and protest my ability to speak about these things, then, you know, I'd be happy to talk to anyone about this. When Frontier Comedy tried to, when Frontier Comedy cancelled me, I said to them, well, I'm happy to speak to anyone about this and explain my position. And no one ever took me up on it, you know. So, it's just one of those things that... I don't know why I brought that up. There's a little part of your mind that thinks, I wonder if there'll be any disruption, you know.
Well, no, but it's interesting. I went to Jordan Peterson at the end of, it might have been the year before last now, and there was lots of talk about all this protest that was going to be there, and three people turned up. So it was a little lackluster. But I have to say the TRAs do have a little bit more stickability. They do have a tendency to be a little bit more forward. And letting their discomfort known. Yeah. Just one last thing, because there are a number of comedians now, comedic writers, mm-hmm. who are sort of starting to gain voices, particularly talking about some of these cultural elements. So, I mean, Francis Foster and Constantine Kisson would be a great example of that. Mm-hmm. Andrew Doyle, his last book, was The New Puritans, was brilliant, absolutely yes. brilliant.
Yeah.
So is there an opportunity that, I mean, forget that silly woke cow up at Edinburgh, at the Edinburgh Fringe, Dublin Fringe, go on, Graham, there you go. Create something
your own.
New.
Yeah, I don't know, it's kind of a weird thing because it's a very limited pool to draw from, because a lot of comedians, they want to keep playing at these venues. They don't want to scupper their career before it even gets going. So most of the people who end up on these bills that I'm on, because I've done a tiny bit of stand-up comedy, I'm no good. I don't really have the stage skills to pull it off. But I write a few funny jokes. That's the only thing I get out of it. But anyway, the people I meet at these gigs are people who were kind of blindsided by cancellation. They thought, again, they just thought, well, you know, I'm going to talk about, for instance, Brexit, you know, in a way that's not just saying everyone who voted for it was a racist. And they get cancelled, and they're shell-shocked, and they suddenly find themselves on this kind of underground venue or underground...
Katie Hopkins talks about like a whole speakeasy type vibe. She's talking at venues and small theatres, and she said some cases it's a barn, but 500 people will turn up.
Sure, sure, yeah. It's like a... but, you know, the people who I'm talking about would be far less contentious than Katie Hopkins. There's one incredibly skilled comedian I know, and his routines are just, they're just brilliant observational comedy. And he can't get a gig because he had an opinion about Brexit and also he's one of those unusual things in this world. He's a Christian, and they don't like that either.
Gosh, no.
Yeah.
No. Wokeism is the new religion, Graham.
Yes, absolutely. So it's kind of, you could build your own systems, your own kind of circuits of the country. I have, for instance, a kind of a thumb drive that someone gave me with all the venues in the UK that won't cancel me, you know, which is very useful. But it's a lot of work. It's not really my first thing. I really want to get back to writing comedy. I like creating characters and having them say silly things to each other. So I'm going to see if I can get back into that.
You pitched, I think, did I hear somewhere you did actually pitch a comedy around cancellation at some point before things went crazy? Is that correct?
Yeah, I handed it into Hat Trick, but Hat Trick Productions were the people who were behind the Father Ted musical and Father Ted and they're the ones who are now holding the musical hostage. And one of the things they did, which I now realize they were just basically humoring me, was commission a sitcom off me. And I wrote a few things about cancellation in that. It was called Cancelled, but it was too on the nose, and it was too... So what it did actually do is it gave me a way of, it made me realize that there is a way of writing about this subject where you don't leave people behind, where even if they don't have any experience of the culture wars, they'll still enjoy the show. And that's what I've always liked. It was like with Father Ted, we never addressed the scandals in the church beyond the premise, which was these three terrible priests had been relocated to this island. We rarely talked about the abuse scandals and things like that, because it wasn't what we were interested in. You know, we wanted to make people laugh and create this silly family on screen, you know. So, yeah, that's what I'm aiming for at the moment, to write something that...
Everybody knows. I mean, that's the thing with Father Ted. In my case, I just, Father Jack was my favourite because every family had a Father Jack. And yeah, Irish Maori, so believe me, we had more than one.
Right. Yes, yes. Yeah. And that was, again, that kind of what you might call low-key satire, in that he represented the old church that was much more unforgiving and almost Old Testament, you might say. And then as time went on, the 60s came along and priests started playing guitars, and that was represented by Father Ted. And then the latest batch was Dougal, which that had nothing to do with the church. Dougal would never have got into the church. So addressing these issues, but in a slightly sideways way, where you're coming at it at an angle so that you're not alienating the vast majority of people who often have no idea these things are going on. That's what I'm interested in at the moment.
Yeah, and I mean, the IT crowd, you could almost do the IT crowd, the woke version, because those, you know, there are so many parallels there. But anyway, we could keep talking about this all day. I know you've got things that we could, that you need to do. So look, this has been an absolute joy. This has been Graham Linehan. He is here with a tour with the Free Speech Union. As I said, there could be a few tickets still left for Wellington tomorrow night if you want to go and get along to that. And Tough Crowd is the book. So make sure you do purchase the book and support Graham any which way you can. Thank you very much for joining me this morning, Graham. I do appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.